Welcome to season 2 of the Get Ready Podcast. Last season, we laid out the basics on how to prepare for an SHTF event that would last 90 days. This season, we're moving beyond the basics to help you strengthen your tribe, become a producer, dominate the intelligence landscape, and thrive when others are struggling to survive. Here are your hosts, RB and JD.
Welcome to the Get Ready Podcast. I am RB, back at it again for season 2 with my friend and co-host, JD.
Hello, everybody. It is good to be back from our extended break. This season is going to be different than last season. As Jeffries mentioned in the intro, last year, we wanted to start out with the practical and tactical basics for those new to prepping. If you made it all the way through season 1, you are no longer new to prepping. That means you've got to start thinking strategically about getting ready. There are so many opportunities for an SHTF event to happen this year that we need to be alert and ready to take action. And that's why we are starting off the season with one of the most important prepping tools in your toolbox, the area study. Buckle up, because in this monster episode, we are going to walk you through what a good area study should look like. Plus, we're going to be giving away a brand new area study workbook to a few lucky people on Telegram. If you're not on Telegram, consider joining the group. Just go to t.me/getreadypodcast. Not only do we do the occasional giveaway, but you're going to get podcast updates, relevant news, answers to any prepping questions, and most importantly, a constant stream of motivation. What we found is that everyone who joined the group joined it because of the podcast, but stayed because of the community. It's a fantastic place for you to go in and learn from people. There's some people that are very new to it and some people that are very experienced, posting pictures of which plants you can eat and different mods you can do to your car and all sorts of different types of things, get home bags, bug out bags, all sorts of things. Join up for a constant stream of motivation. And speaking of motivation, here's Jeffries with your Mindset Minute.
If you want to lead your family and team through SHTF, you've got to lead by example. You can't just talk about gardening and tactical training. You need to go out and do it, sometimes by yourself at first. Knowing you'll need to do an area study is good. Actually doing an area study is better. Following through and doing the hard things is what gives you the right to lead your family and team.
Let's get into our main topic, which is how to do an area study. So we started off by asking our Telegram channel, have you ever done an area study of your bug out location? And here are the results. 50% of the respondents said yes, but it was a very basic area study. 31% said, yes, I've done an in-depth area study. And 19% said no, but I need to do one. So JD, what do you make of those numbers? Do you think 81% of preppers have done a basic or in-depth area study of their bug out location?
Look, I think the numbers make sense given our Telegram community. But for those who aren't familiar with what Telegram is, basically it's a messaging app for groups, kind of like a text thread with a bunch of your friends on it. Except this friend group has 150 members and they're super passionate about prepping. I would imagine that about half of them have looked at a map of their bug out location and circled a few key points of interest. They probably know the roads in and out of the area pretty well, and maybe they know which neighbors have guns and chickens. And I could see 30% spending a little bit more time to print out maps of the area, mark some farms, highlight where a good roadblock might go, put a red X over the local trailer park. Everyone might have a slightly different interpretation of what an area study is. So you'll get a wide range of answers to a question like that.
Yeah, I think it would help the prepper community in general if there were some basic guidelines or standards as to what makes a complete area study. So that's where I think we should start today. And I'll throw out a few ideas and let's just talk to them and see if they make sense for a good standard definition of what a complete area study is. So first one that comes to mind is a complete area study, I think, should have three main focuses. The first is your home. The second is your retreat. And the third is your bug out route. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say certain parts of the area study pertain to your home, such as environmental risks and natural disaster risks. Other parts, such as choke points and cache locations, are very important for your bug out route. But the majority of the study is going to be on your retreat, because that's where you're going to be spending your time during SHTF.
Another main component of a good area study is that it's got to have at least these four basic components. First, it's got to take a look at the climate. The second piece is it's going to look at the terrain. But then the third piece is the social environment. So the people, the demographics, the power players. And then the last piece is the critical infrastructure, right? That's obviously what most people think of an area study is like, where's the water and power coming from? Are there dams that are above you that might crash down? Where are the resources, the big shopping centers, places like that?
Yeah, those are the basic layers. In our area study workbook, we break these four segments down a little bit further. So for example, we split out social into what we call the human element and local governance. So you can categorize things however you like, but I think you've got to include at least these four basic components.
Yeah, and you mentioned our area study workbook. That's pretty exciting. We're going to delve into that a little bit later, what that looks like and how you guys can get your hands on a copy of that workbook. But for right now, let's continue to work through what the main pieces of an area study look like. So we got the three main focuses, home, retreat, bug out. We've got the four core parts, which is climate, terrain, social, and critical infrastructure. I think the next piece that makes an area study complete is properly defining what your area of operation is. And I know there's a little bit of debate about this, but what should be included beyond your area of operation?
Well, in our area study workbook, we have three areas that we cover. Your area of operations, which is very small, and that's usually going to be your retreat property line. Then what we call an area of influence, which is the neighborhood that your retreat is in. Then the larger area of interest, which might be a nearby town or city. But you need to at least define your area of operations and your area of interest for it to be a complete area study.
Yeah, and later on in the show, we'll get into a little bit on how to define what those parameters and boundaries should be and what it looks like on a map. But for right now, so you guys know how we think about it, we look at those three sections, which is the operations, the influence, and the interest. The last piece, which I think composes a complete area study, is it needs to be printed out. It has to be physical. And I think there's a few benefits of that. In your opinion, JD, do you think an area study has to be printed out, or do you think a digital version is enough?
Nah, you got to print it out. If the power goes out, or if you have a new team member arrive, you're gonna need hard copies of it. And there's something about having a formal printed document that you can keep in one place that it provides a structure to your preps that is important, especially if you're operating in a group larger than your family. You know, this is not going to be some screenshots in a folder on your hard drive. It's a physical tool that you can lay flat on a table and your team can stand around it and you can make a plan in a moment's time without worrying about connectivity issues and things like that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, so those are our requirements. Those are our standards of what we mean when we say area study. I think before we get into the how to build that out, I like to try a brand new game that Charles K from our Telegram channel suggested. It is a twist on the classic would you rather discussion game. So this is the way it works. I'm going to read a scenario. I'll start the first one and we can rotate. And JD, you're going to tell me what you think. You own an AR-15. It's got a great optic. It's set up for general purpose, so you could engage closely or you could engage at a distance. What is your secondary platform? Would you rather acquire and skill up on a shotgun or acquire and skill up on a handgun? What would you think?
Okay. So for me, I'm going handgun. I just think that it has more application than a shotgun. And in the scenario I'm using a shotgun, I'm using my AR-15. You know, if it's a home invasion scenario or maybe I'm hunting, I am, unless it's a bird, going to be okay with my AR-15. When it comes to, you know, when it comes to the different applications for a handgun, you can conceal it. You can, it's on you wherever you go. It has more application than a shotgun for SHTF.
Yeah, I agree with all those points. Plus, if your primary firearm jams up or breaks down, you have that secondary on you at all times. I think that's a key point.
I think if you're heading out, if the shotgun is your secondary platform, it's an AR or a shotgun versus an AR and a shotgun.
Totally. Okay, great. All right, why don't you go ahead and pose the second scenario to me?
All right, cool. Would you rather level 4 body armor that can stop anything but weigh 7 pounds each, or some lightweight special threat plates that weigh 3 pounds each but only stop basic AR and AK rounds?
That's a good question. It's tough because I think I would be very content with stopping AR and AK rounds. And myself, I'm not a muscle-bound mule like JD. So the weight difference from 6 pounds to 14 pounds is significant. You know, if I was a 250-pound Marine, then yeah, like 8 pounds isn't going to be an issue. But ounces equal pounds and pounds equal pain. So for me, I go back to our get home back. It was all about lightweight so I could move. And I think I prefer that scenario for me. Now, if I was recommending it for someone else, it might get a little bit more complicated. Because if you live in a city, like an urban environment, then yeah, definitely go with the lightest weights possible because you're only going to be facing, what, like handguns, knives, probably. So you want to be able to move around, disappear in streets and behind alleyways and whatnot, climb over fences to get out of there. Definitely the lighter, the better. As you move out to the suburbs, that's where I think something that can stop shotguns, handguns, and maybe at most ARs is what you might run into in the suburbs. So that's where the level 3 plates or the special rifle threat plates really shine because they're fairly lightweight. As you go further out to the country and you start to face some heavy duty rifles like an AR-10, a 308, some hunting rounds, that's where you might need to step up and the weight is a good compromise. Or if you live in a place where green tipped ammo is super common. So say you live outside a military base and everyone has green tipped ammo, then I think the level 4 plates is probably what you want to go to. Or if you know you're going to face a pretty significant threat where you might take multiple shots and you don't know what they're wearing, then I think you go with the heavy duty stuff. But for myself, in my typical situation, SHTF, I'm not planning on going outside of the retreat. I don't have very long distances of wide open field. So I'm really expecting closer threats with smaller caliber weapons, and weight's my primary issue. So I definitely go with the lighter weight stuff. What do you think?
What do I think on the question?
Yeah, what would you go with? Do you go the lightweight stuff or you go with the level 4 stuff?
I would go level 4.
You would?
Yeah, I'll tell you why.
Because you're a beast.
No, I'm not. No, I mean, yeah. but no. So 14 pounds isn't actually that much to walk around with. Like, it's just a little bit of conditioning. And I know that because that's the 15 pounds is the weight requirement for your vest for the tactical games. Mm-hmm. And you literally have hundreds of people. A lot of them are super fit, but a lot of them are not. When you meet them, you get a little surprised. Look, people get a little surprised when they meet me and I tell them I'm in the tactical game, right? And it's all ages. You know, you have 65-year-olds wearing 15 pounds of body armor and doing, you know, some really serious exercising with it. I think it's a little bit of conditioning. You'd be fine. And I'm not very quick. So
just going to dig in.
I know that if it's going down, you know, I'm probably getting tagged. Like, I'm just not that quick, right?
Okay, I have a question, though. In the tactical games, I know these guys have rifles and some mags, but are they wearing full kit?
So they're wearing, well, you can wear, like, clothing-wise, you can wear whatever you want. So, you know, I'll go in with shorts. I wear shorts, even if it's cold. Like just because
booty shorts?
Yeah, the high ones.
Camo.
1980 poly shorts. And I try to rock a mustache as well.
I mean, that's why your Instagram has 100,000 followers. Just
exactly. Exactly. A lot of the shots really are just of me standing around in my poly shorts with a gun. The poly shorts override the Instagram algorithm for the gun. So yeah, you know, it's not as much of a bear. You know, especially if it's like CQB stuff and you're not, I played Airsoft for the first time with my son a few weeks ago.
Really?
And yeah.
You didn't tell me about this.
I saved it. You know.
We were on a break. Yeah,
we were on a break, RB. We're on a break. And, you know,
stuff
we didn't talk.
We were on a break!
Yeah. So one thing led to the next, and there I was playing Airsoft with my son. And I got, I mean, I got shot to pieces. And not only, like, what's funny, not funny, but interesting is the amount of friendly fire you take in an Airsoft game, at least that I took, was pretty significant. Yeah, I want something that's gonna stop me as much as possible from getting hit.
Yeah, I've got some thoughts on Airsoft, but I'll save those. But what I was getting at when asking if they're in full kit is when you take a gun, right? That's mm-hmm. AR. That's 10 pounds with the mag and an optic. And then you've got your plate carrier. You've got 4, 5, 6 mags, however many mags that are full. You've got your mm-hmm. your belt. Maybe you've got a helmet with some night vision. You're probably adding a good 15 pounds, maybe even more, maybe 20 pounds, between 15 and 20 pounds of weight just in your upper body. And then you're going to add another 14 pounds of weight. So I get conditioning as the solution. And yes, if you're in shape and you could carry the weight, by all means, go for the heavy weight. But it's cumulative. It adds up. And as you're walking or running longer distances, that's going to wear you out much faster. So I don't know if it's worth the extra, 9 pounds for the weight. I think that adds up over time.
I agree with you. I do. It does add up over time. I think when you're looking at your entire gear setup and optimizing, and I think there's a threshold of whatever the number is, it's different for everyone, where you can take that load and still be able to walk around and move quickly if you have to. And it's not like you're going to be wearing them all day.
Yeah,
I guess.
Well, let's keep on rolling. But I will say, I do think most early deaths of preppers in SHTF is going to be due to heart attack from trying to sprint wearing an extra 40 pounds of gear than actually getting shot. So if you're not in shape, just know your limits, right? Know your limits. Last question on Would You Rather is, again, another body armor one. What body armor would you prefer? What type of body armor would you prefer? Would you rather have steel, ceramic, or polyethylene?
So I'm going to go with polyethylene, hands down. Because back in the day, almost all body armor was steel, which meant that it was cheap and could take multiple rounds without breaking. The downside was that it was heavy and fragments from the bullets would splinter up into your neck or groin. You could mitigate that with some anti-spalding, but it increased the price and the thickness. So if you were someone who wanted to move at speed, you'd use ceramic plates. Super lightweight compared to steel, but they would shatter after a single hit. And sometimes they'd even shatter if you just dropped them or stored them in a hot place for too long. So a few years back, we started to see polyethylene plates, which is a plastic material that captures the bullets between layers. So you don't have the spalding. It's lightweight, cheap, and can take multiple hits. It's a little thicker than other plates. You'll want to wear a trauma plate to reduce the back face deformation's impact on your organs. But as far as cost, weight, and stopping power, polyethylene is the way to go.
I totally agree with that. If you're rolling with steel plates, it's probably time to upgrade. They're so cheap these days. It's still readily available. There's no shipping time delays. I think now's a good time to upgrade your body armor. Okay, that's it. Those are 3 questions. Thank you, Charles, for that suggestion. Thank you to our awesome Telegram community for helping us craft this podcast. Let's get back to the area study, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it. So to get started on your area study, you're going to need some tools. And let's walk through what those tools are. All right. Number one, download Google Earth. Or even better, use GaiaGPS.com. That's GaiaGPS.com. It's a free mapping tool, and it's got some premium apps for $5 a month. The next thing you're going to need is the Get Ready Area Study Workbook from our new online store, getready.life. So we've got 4 versions of the workbook. Number one, urban operators. This is for those of you who work in the city and need to get back home in SHTF. Suburban warlords. For those of you who live in the suburbs and plan on working with neighbors to lock down your block or your neighborhood. The small town hero, that's for those of you who live in or just outside a small rural town. And the ranch king, for those who own a large chunk of land all by yourself out in the country. Each workbook costs just $19.99. And for that, you're going to get a complete area study example. That's going to be roughly 150 pages of information you will need in order to lock down your area of operation and your area of interest. You don't need all four workbooks. You just need the one that's most relevant and personalized to your situation.
And if I could just chime in for a second here, when I was developing my area study, I really struggled with what should be in the area study because there was no templates out there that did a good area study. So I bought every ebook I could, every physical book I could, and I got a lot of theory on how to do an area study, but I didn't see a lot of examples and I didn't have the websites where the information is. That's why we're putting out this workbook. We're putting it out so that you have a full, complete example of what the area study should look like. And then you can go through and just update each section to your own needs. So we release them in two formats. One is a PowerPoint and one is a Keynote for Mac users. And each slide is editable. So you can go in there and there's a link to every website that has the data for your region. You just grab a screenshot, you update it, and then you print it out. At the very end, throw in a three-ring binder, and you've got your area study. So I think that format is not available anywhere else. I think this is the first one that I've seen online that has a complete 150-page example that you can go in, edit immediately. It took me over a month to do my first area study. This should shave off weeks of time for you to do it. So that's why we put out this particular workbook.
That's great. Thanks, RB. The last thing you're going to need is a printer and a three-ring binder. And now you're good to go.
Okay. All right. So at the top of the show, we mentioned needing to define your area of operations, area of influence, and area of interest. This is your first step because you're going to be mapping out everything that is inside these three areas, primarily your area of operations and your area of influence. So we have to make sure this is on point. If it's too wide, if you did like, hey, give me a 50-mile radius, you'll never finish your area study because it's too much information for that large area. So we have to understand how to properly identify these three regions. So let's go through them in detail. First, area of operation. So this is going to be the area that includes your house. It's your perimeter defense and the area that you're going to take short-range patrols. If you live in the suburbs, it's probably going to be your block. If you're in a smaller town, a little bit further out in the country, it could be a quarter of a mile or a half a mile in all directions. And if you're that ranch king who's got a lot of rural land, maybe 50 or 100 acres, then it's likely going to be your property line because that's the area that you can put up defensive positions and patrol. Okay, and next is your area of influence. So your area of operations, that small block that you live on, is going to sit within a larger area of influence. It's probably going to be a couple miles, maybe 5 to 10. Here's how I would look at defining this. Work with a buddy, have him drive around your bug out location in his vehicle and use a ham radio or a walkie-talkie, just direct, no repeaters. See what that coverage area is. If he's outside your coverage area, like mark that on a map. So he's feeding back what streets he's on and where he's at. If the signal drops, then he's got to pick it up somewhere else and you know you got to be a little bit closer. That's a good start because if you're outside of walkie-talkie coverage or ham radio coverage, then you're really not going to be able to patrol or defend that location very easily. The second rule of thumb I'd use is to take a drone up in the air and fly around. And once that drone loses signal, which is generally 5, some of the newer ones is close to 10 miles, that's a good indicator that you've reached the edge of your zone of influence and you've got to back up a little bit. Once you have your areas of operation and your area of influence, then you're going to look to go a little bit wider with your area of interest. But I think it's important to point out, like, what is the difference between your influence and your interest areas? The area of influence are neighbors and people around you that you're going to be bartering with and trading with and maybe doing mutual security with. Like, hey, hop on a radio. Someone's being attacked over here. I want to know that. There's a large group of people coming up the street. I want to know that. That's why radio and drone coverage is super important because the people in your area who are being affected by different scenarios may quickly affect you. That area of interest is a little bit wider. So this could be 30 miles or so to the nearest city, town, whatever. That's an area that you want to watch. you're not going to be able to do much, affect much, and things happening in there are not going to affect you directly, but maybe indirectly. So if power goes out in a town 30 miles away, that may impact you eventually, maybe a couple of days. So you want to have a good grasp of what the situation is and the condition is in that town and in that city, but you don't necessarily have to be as detailed or specific on things happening in that area. Your focus is really more about that area of operations and area of influence. So on a map, draw those three circles so that you know what those three areas are, and then you can start identifying all of the other elements within those three areas.
Thanks, Arby. The first major section of the area study is going to cover what the climate is like within your area of operation. The goal of this section is to help you understand the type of foods you can grow, the type of clothing you should wear, and the type of energy you can produce. So here are a few samples from the area study workbook. So some questions, right? Number one, when is the rainy season and when is the dry season? What are the hottest and coldest temperatures in the region? When does your growing season start and end? Do you get enough sunlight for solar power or wind for a wind turbine? And what time does the sun rise and set each day of the year? There's about 25 questions in the section covering every aspect of the region's climate and links to websites that will have all of that information for your area.
Yeah, I love this. You can imagine how important it's going to be if you're a suburbs bro who's bugging out to a cousin's place in the country. Let's say, best case scenario, spring is right around the corner. So you're ready to plant and get your food in the ground. You've got all of these seeds. Let's say you bought them from a survival pack on Amazon. You throw them in the ground, one last frost wipes out a good chunk of them. Or it's unseasonably hot and there's drought and there's heat stress and that wipes out a bunch of plants because the plants were not specifically native or designed for this growing zone. You could have issues where like the creek has dried up or the well's gone dry and you don't have enough water to keep the plants hydrated. There's all sorts of weather-related events that could spell disaster for your plants and animals. And if you haven't been growing for the past 10 years, you may not know the right time to plant or the right time to harvest or what the most extreme temperature or the most extreme rainfall that you're going to get. All of those things can have a dramatic effect on your survival. So understanding the climate, having it written down, having those dates and temperatures in one place to reference is very important for your growing season.
Yep. Thanks, Arby. The next section of the area study is about physical terrain. The purpose of this section is to help you visualize how people are going to move through your area in a grid down event. Here are a few examples from the workbook. What roads pass through your area of operation? What are the lines of drift that people will walk when fleeing a city? What are the choke points and ambush locations nearby? Where is the high ground? Where are the streams and rivers, floodplains, and dams?
You remember the movie 300?
Yep. Love that movie.
I do too. The movie was about Sparta and the Battle of Thermopylae, and it was all about the Spartans understanding the Persians' avenue of approach and picking that choke point between those big rocks where they could just set up a small amount of people and defend against, I forget how many enemies, like hundreds of thousands, whatever. And then you remember the end of the movie was that little goat path that led around back that ended up causing the demise of the Spartans. So people are generally going to follow the path of least resistance. If they can drive, they're going to drive. If they can no longer drive, they're going to abandon their car and walk on the highways because that's the easiest path to travel on. If the highways are blocked, let's say a sheriff is blocked or there's an ambush and they can't continue down the path, they're going to start to go down side streets. And if the side streets are too dangerous or they're blocked, they can't get through there, they'll start to go through open fields and then more dense terrain. So when you're doing your area study, it's important to map out all of those lines of drifts, those paths that people are most likely to follow, and then what the most likely bottlenecks or blockades or choke points are, and then what the detours will most likely be. Because you want to understand how are people ultimately going to end up in your AO? Because you want to try to reroute those people away from you as early up in the chain as possible. That's the goal of the physical terrain section of the area study.
All right, next up is the social environment. But before we get into that, why don't we mention what else is available on our store?
Yes, so JD and I are super excited to announce the launch of Get Ready Life, which is our new line of products to support your preps. So we mentioned 4 area studies available on getready.life, and it's not .com, it's .life. We've got calculators that we mentioned in last season, so like our SHTF calorie calculator, our bulk food order templates, livestock calculator, garden planner, laundry and hygiene calculators. All of those calculators we've got bundled up available on the website. We've also got live events happening. We've got a dry fire workshop, which is going to be a live Zoom-based firearms training course, which I think is very cool. JD is going to be leading that. JD, you want to share a few details about that?
Yeah. So one type of practice that I found helps me a lot for general firearm purposes, but also for training for the events that I enter, is dry firearm practice. What does that mean? Basically, I am practicing all my fundamental moves, stance, changing magazines, you know, shooting from different positions, all without using any ammo. What we want to do is we're going to be hosting regular events on Zoom where you can sign up to a class. We're going to limit the amount of people that are able to join a class so that everybody gets personalized attention. And I have a big monitor up in my office where I will be able to watch everyone's technique and help them get better at mastering the fundamentals. And we will do both AR and handgun. It's a very safe way, very inexpensive way for you to practice your shooting before you make it out to the range. I do it every week, sometimes even multiple times a week. This will be a way for all of you to get better and more proficient at handling firearms.
So we've got that type of training. We've got consulting sessions. So if you want a one-on-one consulting session, let's say you're thinking about buying a piece of land, you're not sure if it may make a good survival retreat, we can help you figure that out. If you need some help on gardening or food storage, team organization, maybe livestock management or other firearms questions, you want to buy a firearm, you're not sure which one to get, anything related to prepping, we got you covered. We can jump on a quick one-time or multiple-time consulting session. Maybe you've got some in-depth questions about medical or solar or communications. We'll have experts in those topics or in those areas consult with you. If you want to do something that's more consistent, like a coaching type of environment, we can do that too. So if you need some motivation, if you need some guidance for how you can make some good progress on your preps, if you need some accountability, you need a coach to check in with and see what you should be doing the next step to get you to where you want to be, what your goals are, we can do that. So we've got all sorts of different things happening on the website. We're going to be rolling out a membership option, which is going to have exclusive content tied to it. We're going to be rolling out physical products. Check it out on getready.life. One other thing as we go back to our area study. If you're doing your area study and you need some help, we've got two options. One, we're going to be doing an area study workshop, which you can sign up for. And we'll be walking you through how to use all the tools, the mapping tools, the websites, the computer tools, so you can actually complete your area study during that workshop. And the second option is if you're stuck on your area study and you can't figure out how to get this info or the section is not working or you need some guidance, we can do a quick consulting just for your area study and help you push through that roadblock. Lots of different options, lots of different ways to improve your preps on getready.life. We just rolled it out. There's a lot more to come, but go check it out. Pick up your area study workbook and work through your own area study today.
We will be adding more products and services to getready.life. We'd appreciate your support. So please go check it out. And as these new services and products come online, we will be sure to let you know in the podcast and on the Telegram channel. All right, on to social environment. So every 10 years, the U.S. government sends people door-to-door to ask questions about who lives in your house. Turns out that census data contains a wealth of information about demographic trends. Here are a few of the sample demographic questions from the area study workbook. Question 1, you know, how large is the population in your area? Is it growing or is it shrinking? What are the racial and ethnic breakdowns? What are the age and gender distributions? What is the political makeup? What are the social and economic statuses? What areas are prone to crime? And what types of crime?
You know, for years here, at least in America, politicians have been trying to divide people based on race and class. Anyone who's an American knows that. They've infiltrated our schools and our businesses. Everyone who's currently in school knows about critical race theory, all of the DIE training and initiatives that happen in the corporate world. They're trying to train each other to hate you. And all of that hatred and division is going to come out in a big way. I think especially this year as an election year, all of that's going to get ramped up. And when the rule of law goes away in an SHTF event, all of that hatred and animosity on race and class is going to create violent environments. So think about it this way. If you're a minority in race or religion or politics or class in your area, you are absolutely going to be a target for some sort of mob violence in SHTF. And even in general, like the more diverse an area is, the more overall conflict I think those areas are going to see in SHTF. So that's why understanding your demographics in your area is very important. Urbanization and immigration is changing the United States incredibly quickly. Like the makeup in small towns in rural counties are changing, I think, without the residents even realizing how quickly it's changing. There's a lot of people in my area out in the country whose families have lived here for 100 years, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you won't be a minority in the next few years. And one last point about this is being a minority in a particular area is going to be a danger for you. So that's why we spent so much time understanding the demographics and the crime statistics and the racial diversity and the class diversity in this particular section, is because you want to understand whether you're in the minority or the majority. And if you're in the minority, you might need to move. What are your thoughts, Shady?
Yeah, so when I was back in college, many years ago, I did criminology, and this is back in the 90s, before all coursework was corrupted by this horrible diversity, inclusion, and equity agenda, and statistics were being whitewashed or whatever washed. So criminology researchers wanted to understand why Japan had one of the lowest crime rates in the world. And what they found was one of the key determinants was that the culture was homogenous and that there was not a lot of diversity. And that because most people in local areas had been local for many, many generations and there weren't a lot of outsiders in Japan, crime was just not a thing. So I agree with what you're saying. I think it's just a human primal trait to adopt a tribe mentality, especially when, even in good times, but especially in bad times, the fingers get pointed at outsiders or people who don't necessarily look the same or come from that area in times of tribal conflict.
I actually think there's a psyop going on in America, which is this whole diversity is our strength agenda. It's been brainwashed into people that they think all type of diversity is good. And I guess what we're trying to say here is diversity in values is dangerous in a situation where there's little or no rule of law. Because when you have diversity of values, you begin to have sort of like group warfare between the two different groups who share different values. And totally. Some of the ways where the values are established is age. College kids have a different set of values than retirees. Men and women in general have different values. People are in the high social economic range have different values than people are in lower social economic ranges. So that's why we've been sort of fed this line that you should hate these other people. And at the same time, diversity is our strength, not diversity of values. That becomes very dangerous.
Yeah, and the broad brush that is used to define diversity, you know, no one talks about diversity of thought or values. It's all, they boil it down to skin color and ethnicity, which I'm very skeptical about skin color determining values, but definitely ethnicity will determine your values. You know, just ethnically, the value system is different depending on where you come from, right? For what's important. But those are like such broad strokes. It's even more narrow than that. If everyone who's listening to this is just really honest with themselves, look at the people you hang out with on a daily basis that you actually like on a daily basis, and then think about your value set, not even SHTF, just going on vacation together. It gets boiled down very quickly as to who really shares the same values when it comes to things like how you're going to raise your kids and what's important and different roles within the family.
And I know we've gone on a bit of a tangent here,
but you know, making sure that you are around like-minded people, knowing that when things kick off, you're really gonna need people that are gonna be on the same page as you for making life or death decisions.
I think one of the greatest mistakes in the prepper community is this lone wolf mentality where people are like, oh, just me and my family are gonna escape out to a cabin out in somewhere. It's totally flawed, totally bad philosophy. People naturally group up in situations where numbers equal security, and they group up based on values. That's why we spend so much effort and time hammering this point home about teams and groups and community and tribe. This is the most important thing to survive SHTF. That's why having an area study is important, because if you've got a mini tribe on your property and it's surrounded by thousands of neighbors who hate you, your tribe is not going to survive.
Yeah, exactly. So knowing your area's general population is good, but it's even more important to know who your neighbors are and what they believe. And luckily, there's widely available technology for you to learn all about the people you live next to without having to host a neighborhood barbecue and ask pointed questions. So most counties have a website called WebGIS. It's a free service that tells you who owns a piece of property. And you just enter in the street address and they'll give you the owner's name. You can then use a background check service like truthfinder.com to do a public data search on the property owner. And that'll return their age, family members. It'll return voter registration, phone numbers, email addresses, criminal history, social media accounts, cars they drive, and a ton more info. Now, we are not encouraging you to be a creeper, right?
Well, we kind of are.
Well, yeah, I guess. But we're not encouraging you to do anything with this information other than put it in your file and just, you know, start making a few notes of people that on paper look like they might gel with you in the event of things kicking off, and ones that maybe would not gel with you in the event of things kicking off.
Yeah. I look at it like, imagine you're head of the CIA, right? You're an intelligence agency guy. This is sort of the mask you want to put on. Like, you want to be collecting all of this information about your neighbors and people in your community, people who go to your church, people you interact with, so that you can make decisions on what they're likely to do and how you're going to react to them down the road. This could be important in helping you form a team or maybe identify partners, mutual assistant groups. Maybe they're not into prepping, but they could be an asset or a liability. So that's the key here, to collect information on people without them knowing on it. And then what you do with it is up to you. But with good information, you can make good decisions. And it's going to take wisdom to understand how to make the proper action based on that data you have. But go ahead. You mentioned voter registration. Like, that could be a little controversial. Tell us a little bit about what that includes and maybe what we could do with that information.
Yeah. I mean, it might have been controversial a few years ago, but things have become so polarized now that this is actually really useful to know. So if you've registered with a political party, that information is going to show up. And then you can check to see if they've made any political donations at fec.gov. So it's not to say that just because someone's mentioned Democrat, that they're in the hard left, social Democrat, anarchist, Antifa bucket. And if someone is registered as Republican, that they're in the hard right, Gavin McGinnis. You know, a center does still exist. It's probably further left or right than it ever has been. But this does give you an idea of where people stand on certain issues.
If a center exists, those people are probably not making political donations. And I say that because the politicians are so not middle, or so not middle. They're so left and they're so right. They're so polarized. They have to appeal to the extreme wing of the party that the candidates themselves take extreme positions. And the people are financially supporting those, probably support those extreme positions. If you're in the middle of the road and you're like, I like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you're probably not financially giving away your money to a particular politician. So it's a signal. I think it's a data point that you should consider. Every little bit of data is knowledge. And the whole point of the area study is to collect data, especially about your neighbors, so you can map out that area of influence and draw some notes on the map on which neighbor is going to be helpful, which neighbor might be a problem. And then I think we could even take it one step further. So let's say we've identified neighbors who could be potential assets. Go ahead and look up where they work and what groups that they're active in social media. And then I think you can make the decision whether you want to engage with them. Let's say my team needs a medical professional. I might look up all of the doctors and nurses in my area. And there's a lot of websites that'll list out all of the doctors because they want clients. Once I get a list of all the doctors, I could use Truth Finder to get their personal home addresses and their political information, if that's available. If I find a match, right, it's a great physician, they align with me politically, and they're accepting new patients, I might go ahead and set up an appointment. I might look them up on social media, see what groups they're in, see what churches they attend, show up at their hunting club, show up at their golf course, show up at their church, try to connect with them in an organic way. You can start to build a relationship and then invite them over for dinner. You know, we're having a few friends over. Why don't you come on, join us for this little backyard barbecue? Start talking to them, see if they're into prepping at all, see if they're up for setting up a neighborhood watch or working together in some ways. I think this technology-focused way of finding team members, using social media and background checks specifically, underappreciated, overlooked in the prepper community. What do you think? Too creeper-ish? Or do you think it's a useful way of going about this?
I think it's very useful. Building up a network is critical, and knowing who these people are and getting as much information as possible is going to be really helpful.
Hey, one last point on that. If you have a team, or if you're considering inviting someone to your team or forming a team, definitely run background checks on everyone. Or you could very well end up in this whole let's kidnap the governor type of approach, where you've got some FBI agent showing up wanting to be part of your little group, and they've got some unusual ideas on how to bring back a constitutional republic. Right? So background check is necessary for every team, and especially every leader of the team.
Yeah. And, you know, we do background checks all the time. You want to fly on TSA pre-check, there's a background check. You want to get a job, they do a background check. You want to rent an apartment, they do a background check. Everyone's doing background checks all the time. So why not do a background check yourself on the people that surround you?
It's all public information, right?
Right.
If this person is a sexual predator, I would want to know that. If this person was arrested for a felony because they beat their spouse, I want to know that. If they've got drug-related offenses, that is good information to know. You don't necessarily have to do anything with that information, but having information is half the battle, and being a good team leader requires good information.
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
All right. Critical infrastructure. So the last big piece in your area study is critical infrastructure, and you are really going to need to know this. It's exactly what it sounds like. Knowing where the water lines are, the sewage lines, food production facilities, energy production, medical facilities, transportation facilities. Then you're going to map out where these resources are stored. So big box stores, restaurants, gas stations, military bases, prisons. Lastly, you're going to map out the small producers and the holders. So you're going to want to know where the farms are, gun shops, butchers, doctors' homes, firewood and hay seller homes, and homesteaders' homes. You should have a long list of people in your area that sell items at farmers' markets and on Craigslist or Facebook, because you might end up showing up at their place early on in SHTF looking to do some last-minute trading before locking down for good.
I like this sort of top-down approach. Like, the first thing you're looking at within your area of interest and influence is how are critical resources getting into your area? What are the modes of transportation, the pipelines, the routes that resources are getting into your area? And then the second level is, where are those resources being stored up in quantity in your area so that you know what you're going to do, either avoid those places or try to protect those places or try to take those places, whatever your decision is. And then the third piece of that is, what are the personal contacts on those critical resources? Who are the owners or managers of these facilities? Who are the doctors that can actually perform healthcare for your group? Who are the farmers that are producing and transporting food to your house? Like, who are the individuals that you can actually work with in a production capacity? So those are the three levels, and I like how it zooms out very wide into very, very personal.
So then let's wrap up this episode with some tips for people doing an area study for the first time. RB, tip number one.
All right, so tip number one is your area study is going to be a living document. It's going to contain information about neighbors and farmers and local politicians. The people-related stuff gets dated because people move out of the area, they retire, politicians change. So you're going to need to revisit this area study and update it. There's going to be some areas like your local climate and your natural disaster threats, critical infrastructure, maybe even nuclear fallout zones. That is not going to change out very often. But still, be prepared to go through it every, let's say, year, 6 months, year, and make sure that you've got updated material for those sections that are going to go out of date. Tip number two, you want to hit that?
Be careful with your OPSEC. Your area study binder contains a lot of information about your area of operation, and especially plans that you may have for roadblocks, defensive positions. You've got detailed personal information on your neighbors, and I'm sure they don't know that you necessarily have that. You don't want this falling into the wrong hands, is what I'm saying. So only show people who are in a need-to-know basis. This is the equivalent of highly classified documents, so store it in the safest place possible, which we all know is in your garage right next to your Corvette.
Joe Biden.
So funny story. One of my early teams, it was a husband and wife, were in the group, and the wife asked me if I had a bunker. She goes, do you have a bunker? And I was like, no. And she's like, okay. And I go, but if I did, I wouldn't tell you anyway. And she got very offended. And she's like, why? And I was like, because it's on a need-to-know basis. Like, even if we're grouped up, you don't need to know today where my bunker is. Right. And I don't have a bunker, but even if I did, I wouldn't tell anyone. Mm-hmm. And that's the point about need-to-know, is it goes beyond just, hey, we're in a trusted circle of friends here. It's like, unless you need that information to do your job, you don't need to know. Okay, next tip with the area study. Now, we didn't get into this much today on the podcast, but this social environment section of the workbook is really interesting. There's a whole area on local governance. And the idea here is to first start with your tribe goals. What are you trying to accomplish? And then write down who in your area can influence those goals. Here's an example. Okay, so let's say that your vision for your SHTF retreat is to go in with a few friends and buy a raw piece of land, and each family can build their own cabin on the land. Maybe it's a few acres each family. The nice part about this plan is you've got a great vacation spot where you can go in good times, and then bad times you can all bug out. But who can influence those goals? More people than you probably think. For one, if you're out in the country, you have a zoning commissioner and they decide that your land isn't zoned for multiple housing units, they can deny you the ability to build. Your health inspector might not give you a permit to dig a well or septic. The sheriff might decide that your gun range is a noise violation, or they might see a drone flying up there and they might hassle you about that. The tax commissioner might decide that now that your land has multiple residences on it, that it needs to be reassessed and taxed at a much higher bracket. There are a ton of people in local government that can make your prepping life very easy or very difficult, both before and after SHTF. But what if the mayor decides that your farm is going to feed the town in an emergency basis? What if the local militia decides that because you wouldn't supply them with all of your ammunition, you're a traitor and that you are a security threat to them? All of these groups and people, whether they're in power now or they will be in power in SHTF, you're going to need a plan on how to deal with influential people and build influence yourself. That's what's nice about this workbook, is it helps you explore the idea of creating a power map, which is a visualization of influence in your area. And how do you connect yourself to those influential people? And how do you influence the influencers? So I think we really need to spend more time exploring that, perhaps in the area study workshop. I can get into a little bit more how to build that, how it looks, how to achieve more influence in your local community. But the big idea here is that SHTF is not just about storing up a bunch of food. Someone is going to be in power. And if you want to really protect your group and your tribe, you need to be able to work with those people in power and influence those people in power. So start planning for that now.
That's great. Tip number four, if you have a team, delegate sections of the area study to your team members. So you want your security lead to do the physical terrain. And if it's your retreat that you own, you're going to do the section on the neighbors. If you've got an older child, have them do the section on climate and demographics as a little research project. Many hands helping out can knock this project out in a few days.
And here's the next tip. Speaking of being more efficient, creating the area study, you can hire internet researchers off freelance websites like Upwork.com. UPWORK.com for a few bucks. For a few bucks an hour, they will do all of the internet research for you. Give them the area study workbook, give them an address of your bug out location, or if you want to improve your ops up a little bit, maybe give them the address of a house a few streets down and let them do all of the work for you. Now, granted, you're going to have to drive around a little bit. Boots on the ground are important, and there's some things about neighbors that you might want to do yourself, but 90% of the area study is done completely online. You can hire someone in India. He doesn't care about your place out in Wisconsin. They don't care about that. They just want to make a few dollars, but you could save yourself hours and hours of research for a very little bit of money by hiring someone online. And this last tip is printing out 150 pages of maps is going to destroy the ink in your printer. So go ahead, do yourself a favor, run to Staples and have them print it out for you. It'll save you a lot of money in the long run. Okay, let's do the mission real quick. It's going to be easy, right? Today's mission is, as you'd expect, to do your own area study of your bug out location. Don't forget that you also need to think about what your route is going to be and what's going on in your current home. But focus on the bug out location for your area study. Here's the key part. Set a date on when you can get started and give yourself about 1 to 2 weeks to complete your area study. A lot of these tools, the Gaia Maps and Truth Finder, they have free trials or very inexpensive trials, $5, $1 a month. You can knock out the whole thing for a couple dollars using those premium tools. But set yourself a deadline. Make a promise that no matter what, by this date in 2 weeks, you're going to print out whatever you have done. So even if it's not 100% complete, force yourself to print out what you have. And that in and of itself is going to be a really strong motivator. That's the mission. And that about does it for the episode. Our podcasting schedule is going to be a little bit different this season. Last season, we pushed out an episode once a week. At the moment, we are looking to do one in-depth episode like this about once a month. And our plan is to have more frequent, smaller chunks in between, and then some premium content that we could post on our website, getready.life. If you would like to support the show, go ahead and head over to getready.life. Pick up an area study workbook for $19.99. It's going to save you a lot of time doing your own area study. It's going to allow us to continue bringing you great content, new episodes, new tools, new events. And with that, Jeffries will see you out.
Sun Tzu says, plan for what it is difficult while it is easy. Do what is great while it is small. If you're listening to this episode, then you have access to one of the greatest military tools of all time, the internet. You can access satellite imagery, mapping tools, demographic data, background checks, and research tools that Sun Tzu could only dream of. Now is the time to do an area study. If you don't know where you'll be bugging out to, do a mock study to help develop your intelligence gathering skills. If you already have an area study, update and add to it. Take advantage of the online resources now, while it's easy, so that you have key information at your fingertips when things get hard. Grab your area study workbook today at getready.life, and don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you don't miss our next show. Until next time, stay safe out there.